Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, October 21st, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our newly redesigned website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. This is a special edition of the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show. We normally broadcast at 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Thursday. But today we wanted to try something a little bit different, an 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time show. We know a lot of people work, of course, during the day, teachers and farmers and lawyers and you name it. And though we have a huge listenership, we wanted to try something a little bit new and see if we got a different crowd or a new opportunity for folks to listen live. So we're trying today to do an 8 p.m. show, and that's what we're doing right now, broadcasting live 8 p.m. Eastern Time all around the world. And we hope that you have tuned in this evening. If you're a new listener, we thank you very much. If you're a regular listener, thank you very much as well. So today we have a great show lined up for you this evening. We've got the chicken doctor, Peter Brown. He's going to be joining us. We've asked over the weekend for people to post different questions for him. We also do open mic. So if you have a question for Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, you can call in 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. I'll be announcing that number again later in the show if you'd like to call in, or you can join us in the chat room. Post your question in all caps in the chat room. We'll hopefully be able to see that and get your question on the air, but we have a lot of questions to get to that were posted on our Facebook page. We may not even have time to get to all of them, but if you do call in, you will get precedence over the posted questions in the chat room and on our Facebook page. Again, that's 347-637-3237. We have 50 phone lines that are open, so we can take 50 callers at a time, basically. So if you have a question for Peter Brown, we'd love to hear it when we bring him on and get to our Q&A segment. Let's see, had great episodes last week, which were super. Every show is archived for your listening pleasure on iTunes.com, Zoom.com, Podcast.com, and right here on BlogTalkRadio.com. 875 episodes at your list for your listening pleasure at your fingertips, and absolutely free. So you can listen to any and every show we've ever done with all of our chicken experts. I want to go ahead and say hello to all of our listeners out there, mainly the homeschoolers that incorporate this radio show into their daily curriculum. Thank you very much. May not be doing homeschooling now at 8 p.m., but during the 12 o'clock hour, boy, we have a lot of homeschoolers that tune in. We thank you very much for doing so. All the over-the-road truck drivers we hear from via email, an instant message. You listen 24 hours a day on iTunes. I know you do, and we thank you very much. Keep the rubber on the road. Get that freight delivered safe so you can get back to your family safe. Everybody listening live, thank you very much. The thousands that listen to the archive, thank you very much. And last but not least, all of the feed and seed stores that stream this radio show live every day for their listeners. We thank you very much. We hope business is doing very, very well. So let's get over here. Oh, well, let me make this announcement. It is now in stone. It is now a done deal. It is now on the calendar. We're going to be hitting the road again like we always do, traveling across the country, spreading the chicken love. And we've got an event now scheduled here for November. It's going to be in Nashville. It'll be November the 9th. Again, that's Saturday, November the 9th in Nashville. It'll be a 10 a.m. start time, and it is at a local ag center there. Again, it just came out today, so I don't remember the name. But they'll be giving out posters and bag stuffers all across the Nashville area. 12 area tractor supply stores are going to be advertising this. We're going to be sending out press releases to all the local media up there, and including our good friends up there at UCAN, which I believe is the Urban Chicken Advocates of Nashville, UCAN, and a great group of people up there. And so we've got a big event coming up on November 9th there just outside of Nashville. It's going to be a book signing, The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and about an hour and a half to two-hour workshop. We're going to give you a little bit of information about everything from getting started to the movement to laws, incubation, brooding, nutrition, the whole nine yards. So we always have a great turnout. Now, the facility only holds 100 people, so it'll be standing room only. So we want you to get there early. But that, again, is on November the 9th. And then after that, we'll be heading down to Florida Way, maybe doing a few tours down in the South Florida area as well. And I'll keep you posted all of that. But our next big event will be November the 9th, Saturday in the Nashville area. So mark your calendars for that. Okay, it's time for our Chickens in the News segment. Let me get over here. And very, very interesting. I went through a lot of them today. But this one was pretty interesting. It comes to us from across the pond over in the UK. Many of you know of a company over there regarding backyard chickens called Omelette. And if not, you can look them up, I'm sure, on the Internet. But the they're listed under Quirky News. And high visibility jackets help chickens cross the road. I'll post this on our Facebook page a little later. High visibility jackets help chickens cross the road. Now, let me give you a visual here. Many of you are familiar with one of our sponsors, Crazy K Farm, and they make a hen apron, hen saver, it's called, hen saver, hen apron, and it looks kind of like that. It is a contraption that the bird actually wears, but in this particular case, I guess it could be triple purpose. You know, it could help protect them from when the rooster mounts them to mate, possibly ward off a hawk attack. We've heard of instances of that. Maybe keep them a little warm in the winter if they're molting. But in this case, it's so they can cross the road safely because these are reflective. Okay, an Oxfordshire company has launched high-visibility jackets for chickens to help them safely cross the road. The high-visibility chicken jacket has been developed by a company called Omelette to relieve worried chicken owners on dark winter evenings. The fluorescent vests come in two colors, bright yellow and shocking pink, and cost £12 each. I do not have a conversion chart here to give you an idea of what that is in U.S. dollars, but £12 each over there in the U.K. Omelette director Johannes Paul said of the bizarre item, "We actually had people inquiring about this kind of thing, so we decided to look into it. Most people who have chickens as pets will have them out and about, and we do hear about chickens who do cross the road. The bibs are providing, the bibs are proving to be a hit after the company sold 200 in just 10 days, with the pink version twice as popular as the yellow version." So, well, you know, hey, not sure. There's probably more hens out there than roosters, right? And pink may go with their toenail polish. Who knows? But pink are outselling the popular yellow ones. So we'll post this on our Facebook page a little bit later. The quirky news coming to us from the UK. Also, there was something that just kind of makes you go, On Saturday, I ran across a picture of some women's pumps, if you will. They were high heel shoes, and it's just one of those things. Amazing how things can go viral on you know, something like Facebook. It was absolutely amazing. So I think it was Saturday afternoon around 3 p.m. and I posted a picture on my Facebook page. Now, yes, we do have 74,000 plus fans there. I think more than any other chicken page in the country is in the world, really, as Facebook's concerned, but. I posted a picture of these pink women's pumps, and instead of the long stiletto heel, if you will, it has a chicken foot attached to it. And just, let me just give you some numbers here. Just in the last couple of days here on Facebook, that picture had been shared close to 10,000 times. 9,443 as we speak, and it was seen, the picture was seen by over a half a million people, 531,968 as of right this second. If I refresh the page, that will go up again. It's still going viral crazy out there in digital land. Truly amazing. Truly, the Internet's an amazing thing. So that was, I think, Saturday. Yesterday, I posted a picture that wasn't quite as popular. And I posted ladies, well, first off, under the chicken foot chicken shoes. I put a little something for the crazy chicken ladies out there, and they loved them. And then Sunday I posted, ladies, I know you like to accessorize, so I thought these earrings would go wonderful with the shoes I posted yesterday. And they're basically little chicken feet made into earrings. So, yeah, not so popular, maybe around Halloween or so, but some people loved them, some people hated them. So I posted those yesterday. You know, the ladies like to accessorize. So this afternoon I posted a picture of the hen bag. So I said, and finally, here's a matching handbag, or should I say hen bag, to match your shoes and earrings. So that was very popular. People are wondering where to get that hen bag. And there's two places, mypetchicken.com. If you happen to be following us on Facebook and listening tonight and didn't see that post, I posted about 10 times where to get it, mypetchicken.com. Or you can pick it up at Amazon.com as well. Just type in the hen bag and you'll see it. There's a two different versions of it. And there's a purse, a chicken change purse as well that will fit perfectly inside your hen bag. So, ladies, there you go. You have a full ensemble posted on our Facebook page from the pumps to the earrings to your pocketbook or your purse, the hen bag. And you can travel around the country in style. Sporting your hobby of backyard chicken keeping. So check us out over on Facebook, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. All righty, so without further ado, it's about quarter past the hour. We're going to go over here to the phone lines, and we are going to bring on Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, also founder of First State Vet Supply. Let's give him a big Chicken Whisperer welcome. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us this evening.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Hopefully this will be a good hot show in the evening for folks that just can't break away and listen at noon. We're going to try it a couple of times here over the next 6 weeks or so. We'll do a couple of evening shows and make the determination if it is worth it to change our ever-so-popular time of the last 874 episodes at noon, but we'll just, you got to try it out every now and then and see what happens. So we're trying it tonight. No worries there. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Let me get over here where all the questions are, and I'll scroll down and we'll kind of get started from the top. We'll just start off with this one. Just popped on the screen.
Okay.
George, down from Florida, he asks, And you being a long time ago, kind of in the commercial industry a little bit, here's this question. If you put your chickens out in a chicken tractor and move them to different locations around your pasture regularly, would that be considered free range, or do you have to let the birds roam loose and risk the issue of them being unprotected and losing their life to predator attack? So they have way too many hawks, eagles, bobcats, mountain lions, just to let the birds run loose. They couldn't do it. So let me just kind of first explain this, and you can kind of tell me your opinion on it. George, we thank you very much for submitting your question. We did an issue on the local Fox News affiliate in Atlanta about the definitions of what all these things mean. And not to get into all of them, because I want to get to everybody's questions, but the definition actually of free range means, okay, that the birds can still, the birds can still be contained in a large warehouse, large barn, a large facility, and they're just not in cages, okay? They may have roosts in there. They may have some nesting areas in there for them. They can roam around at free will. And at the end of that 300-foot warehouse, barn, chicken house, whatever, there is a little door. That door could be the size of a dog or a cat door. And on the outside of that can be a little concrete pad inside chain link fence. And if the birds choose, actually, to go out that door, then that's up to them. If they don't, those eggs in the store can still be labeled free range. So most people, when they think free range, beautiful, lush, green pastures with a red barn and little yellow daisies growing up and popping up and the chickens just being all nice and fun out there. And they buy these things because they think they're doing good for the chickens. It says free range, but they can still be in a commercial chicken house roaming free in there. Some have roofs, some have nesting boxes, okay? But free range meaning they have a door at the very end of that long 300-foot building that the chickens can choose or not choose to go out, but that label on the egg carton can still say free range. So, but we understand what you're getting at. That may be the official answer if you want to label your eggs free range. I know that Joel Salatin does just that. He's got some chicken attractors. I've seen him. We've been to his place, met him. Awesome, awesome place. And he does that, again, to protect him from predators. He's got some that are built real over the ground. You can YouTube it and see what he's got, his designs. And they drag them all over their pasture and land up there in Virginia. So with your background, Peter, what would you say to George? He wants to be able to have free range and the benefits of free range, but he's just got too many predators to just let him go happy-go-lucky without some type of protection.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag at best. I guess it depends on a person's perception of what free range really is. Just like you said,
yeah.
Everybody has that that different interpretation. I guess if you know, from my perspective, free range means to me birds that have access to the outside. Anytime they want, basically, and that doesn't mean that that they can't be predator-proofed either. I mean, if you have a big enough, wallet, and you've got, place to, big enough to do so, you can make a pretty decent-sized aviary, so to speak, and cover it with netting and. Pretty much make it predator-proof. It just depends. But to me, free range really means being out in the grass and that kind of thing, rather than being cooped up 24/7 in a building. There's people that look at it, each and every different way. Some think it's not natural and certainly isn't. And other people look at it, they don't care. Other people. Have this illusion that free range means that they're out running around in the grass all day long. And in some places they do that, but you certainly do run the risk of predation, and no question about that. I guess if I were, I think you said he was in Florida, I would probably look up what their state's definition of it, what does their state accept as that definition. Mm-hmm. I'll say this from what I've seen of most of these chicken tractors, and I will not speak to the fellow's chicken tractor because I haven't seen it, but most of them that I've seen, I wouldn't call that free range by any stretch of the imagination. As a matter of fact, most of them that I've seen, Andy, I don't know about yourself, but most of them that I've seen, overcrowded, too many chickens in them. There's an organic farm here locally where I live. I had my CSA there last year. We changed out for different reasons, but they grow chickens and turkeys, and they grow them all in tractors, partly because of predation. And I would want to be one of those turkeys in that tractor that they've got, and I would want to be one of those chickens. I would actually rather be in a cage in a chicken house than be in those particular, I'm saying those particular, chicken tractors. You talk about being overcrowded and everything else, and the only for the chickens at least, because you can see them from the road. See, that's how I know. You don't have to go on the property. All you do is just drive by the place. You can see them out there. But in the summertime, the only place that those chickens have to go is under this so-called chicken tractor that they have. It's kind of raised and it's on wheels, so they can move it around a little bit. And it's got some fencing and stuff that goes with it, but still in all, and the turkeys were even worse. The turkeys could stand up and sit down, about it. And so I guess it's what whatever your feeling is on it, but I wouldn't want to be those turkeys, I wouldn't want to be those chickens. If you have a large enough chicken tractor where they can get up, move around, and you're moving it every day, it doesn't take long for a handful of birds to tear up whatever grass is under them. I mean, they will just tear it up. So, I mean, it may, in my opinion, may have to be moved more than, once or twice a day. It's a tough question to ask, answer, but from my perspective, free range to me has always meant open the door, turn them loose, kick them all out, close the door, and you're on your own. And you know, you might have areas, you know, where they can get under something and get away from some aerial predators and things of that nature. But I've seen them be pretty aggressive. I've got a friend down in Virginia who has some fairly decent-sized chicken coops for his chickens, and he left an end door open one time and come back to find a red-tailed hawk in there just having party. So, I mean, they will go right in, and you know, and getting them out is is a whole other story. But, you know, not to belabor the point, to me, you know, I just, you know, would rather see them, you know, kick them out the door, and but therein lies the problem of it. So, you know, having been, you know, on the commercial side of this thing and seeing what goes on there, you know, what people have to understand about the ones that are in the commercial sector, for the most part, a lot of these pictures that you see on Facebook and everything are not true, at least not for the most part in this country, because I can tell you that the birds would not perform. And a person who has a large farm with hundreds of thousands of chickens on it that don't perform is soon out of business. And that doesn't mean that the birds won't molt and lose feathers and those things while they're in those cages. That doesn't mean one won't step on another. That's just the unfortunate part of it. You know, and that's, you know, up to an individual, you know, where they get their eggs, how they, you know, where they buy them and so on. But it isn't quite you know, what it's portrayed to be. The same thing with, I've seen picture after picture of this sea of white broiler chickens that where there is absolutely no way for them to move. Well, I'll tell you what, that's not how they're grown, because they don't perform. If they can't get the food and water, they don't grow. And so, you know, it's all been figured out and it's all worked out, and we've talked about this numerous times before. You know, dead chickens don't pay bills, yours, mine, or in the commercial sector. And it is behooves you to take good care of them, and by and large they do. And there's a built-in factor of, you know, a certain amount. They know that there's going to be a certain amount of mortality, and that's all built into it. More than that, right. And they start to get nervous. So I don't know. That's my interpretation of it, anyway.
No, I'm sure he will appreciate that answer. So and maybe he'll get back with us and let us know kind of what decisions he made and what research he's done to make his decision. That'll be great. Heather has one here, very interesting question here. Heather says, which is better to have on hand, Thailand 50 or Thailand 200? I've had the 50, but my bottle is set to expire in December, so I want to know if I should replace it with the same or the more concentrated version. Less liquid injection may be better for the bird, but what about the risk of necrotic tissue? Thanks. I love listening on the Stitchler app on my Android. So thank you very much, Heather, for tuning in. And there's your question.
It's a good question, and I think the way that I would answer this is that unless I had to give an injection, I probably wouldn't. Injections, from my perspective, should be reserved for the odd bird or two that may have a respiratory issue that you're wanting to fix fairly rapidly. I mean, you want to fix them all rapidly, but when you've got a larger flock, let's say 25, 30, 40 birds that need to be injected once or twice a day for a minimum of 5 to 7 days, maybe more, that can get pretty old, and that can be pretty tough on the birds. Those who give Thailand 50 or any other ones of these injectables for 2 or 3 days are inviting antibiotic resistance. There's a lot of it. I see it online all the time. I gave it for 2 days. Things got better and everything else, but you are certainly inviting antibiotic resistance by doing that. That's number one. Number two, it really doesn't matter whether you use Thailand 50 or Thailand 200. For whatever the reason, the Thailand 50, as of late, the last couple of years at least, has been very short-dated. Even the stuff that I got in here last week is very short-dated, about 8 or 9, 10 months maximum on it. And I don't know the answer why, but it is. if I were going to, if I could find the 200 and it was longer dated, I would probably opt for that. You're just going to give a lot less. Thailand 50 amounts to 50 milligrams per ml or cc. Thailand 200 is four times as strong per ml or per cc, 200 milligrams per ml or cc. So therefore, you have to give a smaller dose. So, if you're going to give a half a cc of Thailand 50, then you're probably going to want to give a quarter of a cc of Thailand 200. Now, I know there are people that give full cc's and everything else of either one, and you run the risk then of killing the bird. And I know there are people that do it, and people have not had any problem with it, but I also know a slew of people that have killed them. So I opt for small birds, Thailand 50, quarter cc twice a day, large birds, a half a cc twice a day, and then spread it out. And give, let's say if you gave one at 7 or 8 in the morning, you come back at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, give it again. I doubt you'll have any problem at all. But that's what I would do. And again, she mentioned necrotic tissue. There can be problems with these things. Thailand can be fairly reactive when injected. So, you know, you have to be careful doing that. I suggest the Thailand 50 under the skin of the neck and not intramuscular anyway.
Okay. So. No, great question. Thank you very much for posting it on our Facebook page, and thanks for that in-depth answer, Peter. Awesome. Let's go on to the next one. We'll try to get as many of these as we can get done. People have posted, and we're going to try to get to these. Marcy has a good question. I'd like to hear Peter's opinion on winter feed quantities and types. I plan to add extra protein, adding black oil, sunflower, and alfalfa to make up for the lack of bugs in the yard in the wintertime. But what else should I consider with my winter feed for my chickens, if anything?
Okay. I don't know if you need to boost the protein so much, and I'm not a nutritionist, but I can tell you basically what we do here. A standard layer feed here right now, we're using Southern States. I forget exactly which one it is, but it's one of the better ones that they have that we get here. And for wintertime, we generally add a little bit of corn and black oilers to it. And that's about it. She can add the alfalfa. I think that's what you said, alfalfa?
Yeah, alfalfa. Yep.
Yeah, if they'll eat it. Not all birds are fond of it, so if she can get them to eat it, fine. Not going to hurt them a bit. Be good for them like anything else. But I don't think you need to do a whole lot. If we're talking about wintertime, we want to make sure, we keep the birds, relatively warm, free of direct drafts, wind, rain, snow, blowing snow, that kind of stuff. But if you can do that, you don't really need to, heat the place or anything like that. If the building, I can tell you something that people can do. If your ceiling is way too high, and if you're 5'9" and you've got an 8-foot ceiling, you could drop that a foot or so and still not bang your head and bring that heat closer down to the bird. So there's a zillion things people can do, and I know that wasn't necessarily part of the question, but I don't think you need to bump the protein up too much. Too much protein is no good either. You invite problems there. You invite kidney problems and gout and that kind of stuff. So I probably wouldn't go up on the protein. I'd probably stay where I was. The black oil is being added to it, and a little bit of corn should suffice.
Okay. Perfect. Another good one here. This is from Jeanwood Brown Smith. Is it okay to use eggs from a very young hen to incubate and hatch? My hens have been laying about 2 months. Can I go ahead and try to put them in the beta?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not. Sometimes they don't hatch necessarily as well, depending upon how well the rooster is doing his job. But if the rooster, if you observe the rooster mounting the hens and so on, I'd go ahead and use them. I don't see any reason not to. It's really not related to how young they are versus in actuality. Sometimes The real, real, real young ones don't hatch that well, and neither do the real old, old ones. Just depends. And we've talked that one to death a zillion times, too, about the quality of eggs that you get from the breeding stock based on the quality of what you give the breeders to start with. From my perspective, you're much better off to supplement breeding stock several weeks before you put them together and then do a supplementation program a couple, 3 days a week during the laying cycle when you're collecting eggs so that the stronger the embryo that comes out of that egg when it hatches, the better off you're going to be. So that's the way I would approach it. I would supplement the breeders, and then I would I'd go ahead and hatch them, see what goes on. But that's generally the way it works. Most people don't throw away too many eggs.
Kobe says, another question here, can too much oyster shell harm my chickens? I have 7 hens, 2 roosters, who have access any time to oyster shell through an automatic feeder. They do seem to be going through it quite quickly. I've had more egg problems since I actually put this out for them. Got 2 buff Orpingtons, approximately 8 months old, have been laying for a couple of months now, and we have gotten a few soft egg from both in the past few weeks. Coincidence or maybe something contributing to this? She also wanted to sit on this egg last night, but we finally got it out from under her when she stood up. Is this normal? The main question is, can too much oyster shell harm them? Oyster shell harm them.
Did she mention how old they were?
Yes, 8 months.
No, it shouldn't harm them, and if they're eating it, the general assumption is, and always has been, and to my knowledge is still the same to this day, is that you give it free choice, and they'll go and they'll eat it. Now, when they set an automatic feeder, I'm questioning whether that's just a feeder that you fill up with feed and or oyster shell, or is it something electric? The noise of the of an electric device coming on will stimulate birds to go to something and eat it irregardless. And so that could be part of the problem. If soft-shelled eggs, we've talked about this before, it's the calcium-phosphorus ratio is out of balance. I would try supplementing with some vitamin D3 or a complete vitamin package in addition to that and see if that doesn't straighten out the eggshells. Usually it does. We've been down that road before, too. We talked about all that stuff. Actually, not all that long ago, maybe several months ago, we went through the supplements and problems and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It could be coincidental, but it also could be that if he has a true automatic feeder where it's a motorized device, which the person didn't say, that can stimulate. We know from years and years of research that automatic feeders coming on in a laying house stimulate birds to head to the feeder, right to the feed trough and be the first one there as the feed comes by. And because generally what happens in a commercial house that, they usually have a feed chain that comes around. Some places have, depending on what kind of birds they are, broilers use a feed pan, and that's like an auger up and down the house. But at any rate, the feed will stay in. After the feeder goes off, it'll stay there, and the birds will eat it right down to nothing. There'll be hardly anything. They'll eat everything they can get out of that, everything they can reach. And when that feeder comes back on later in the day, every bird in the place that can get to the feeder will stand there and wait for that feed to come down the line. And it's an interesting thing if you've ever seen it happen, because if it's got any kind of large particles in it, that's the first thing they go for. It's the first thing that catches their eye, and they'll go ahead and eat that. So it's very possible if it's like that, if it's just an irregular standard pour-in type feeder, they wouldn't be getting that stimulation, and then if they're eating it, they probably need it, and they're probably deficient in something else. That would be my feeling on it. Whether it's coincidental at this point, I couldn't say.
Okay.
To do some experimenting around, but I would leave it alone, and I would add a good vitamin pack like Vitapro B, or get some of the AD&E powder from the website, put that in the drinking water, and see if that doesn't help with the soft-shelled egg thing.
Awesome. Okay, good information regarding that. I know that a lot of people use it, a lot of people don't. A lot of people, if they get, you know, a few soft shells or they're just the shells are breaking too easy, they'll add it at that point. Some give it off time, so it's kind of a, you know, people have their own technique of doing that. So good information from you, Doc. I think we may have a caller online. I'm going to go ahead and see if they just happen to accidentally press one to speak live or if they actually have a question for you. So let's go over here to the phone lines to area code 304. That's area code 304. You're live on the air. If you'll state your name and tell us where you're calling from, please.
Yes, my name is Sabrina. I'm calling from West Virginia.
Okay.
And I have a silver gray Dorking. They have the five toes. And the one toe on the Dorking had a black spot came up on it. And I thought it was bumblefoot. So I removed that, and I cleaned it all out and kept changing the dressing every day for like 2 weeks, and it just seemed like it kept getting worse. So then I cleaned it out again. And I've put her on an antibiotic since, and it's still not getting any better.
Okay. What kind of antibiotic?
Well, at first I started her on the, I got it right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Doramycin.
Useless. Okay, go ahead. What else did you try?
And then I started her on penicillin. And then I'm now giving her penicillin.
Okay, and how big a bird is this?
She probably weighs about, I'm going to say, 5 pounds.
Okay. Roughly, okay. And how much of the penicillin are you giving her?
I'm giving her a half of a, I guess that would be, it's on the half mark is what they said to give her.
Who said this?
A milliliter.
Okay, half a, okay.
The syringe says milliliters on it, and I'm...
Right. Milliliter and cc are the same, so it doesn't matter either way. So you're giving a half a milliliter. Okay. And you're doing that once or twice a day? Once a day.
Once a day.
Okay. All right. And who told you to give her half a cc?
I believe it was at the store where I bought it from,
okay.
Tractor Supply.
Yeah. Well, I think what I would probably do is I would probably split this up into and do two doses. I do one dose in the morning and one dose in the afternoon. So if you did it 7 o'clock in the morning and you did it at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, I would try that.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to be that successful with it. And the reason for it, while penicillin is a very powerful antibiotic in its own right, it is not that good at getting out to these what we call soft tissue problems,
mm-hmm.
like bumblefoot or wherever this whatever this problem seemed to be. Where was this spot on this bird, on the foot?
It was on the fifth toe.
It was on the toe itself, on the bottom of the top.
Yeah, the toe that is absolutely useless.
Right,
it's
but was it on the, bottom or the top of the toe?
On the bottom.
Yeah, okay. It probably was some sort of bumblefoot issue, but I would try that, and if you continue to have problems, you're going to have to move up to something else as far as an antibiotic is concerned. The duromycin is never going to do the job. Number one, it's a very weak product. Duromycin is a tetracycline. It's a 6.4-ounce bag. That's 181.4 grams. There's only 10 grams of activity in a bag, so you get a big bag of nothing. And
right.
It's not the type of an antibiotic we would use at all to get out to the what we call the periphery, and you're talking to getting all the way down to this little tiny part of the toe. You know, it's just not going to do the job. You stand a better chance with the penicillin, and you might do a better job with this penicillin. Are you putting anything else on it? When you're saying you're changing the dressing, are you putting any triple antibiotic ointment or anything like that on it? Or?
Yes, I am. I'm putting triple antibiotic. When I was using the purple spray, but
okay.
I stopped using that, and I have the Vetra fill-in spray, too. I
okay.
use that. I clean it with that, and then I put the triple antibiotic on it, and then I wrap gauze, and then I use the other black tape that holds everything on there real good.
Okay. Well, if the bird were mine, that's what I would do. I would go with a half cc twice a day. Certainly going to have more antibiotic floating around in the bird's bloodstream by doing that than you would. By the time by the time nighttime rolls around, you know, when the birds have gone to roost and it's good and dark out and everything else, there's very, very little antibiotic left in her body to help fight this thing because it has a very short half-life. It's not going to hang around all that long, not in any great quantity. Most antibiotics, the majority of it, not all of it, but the majority of them are excreted out very early on. So I would, you know, if it were mine, I would do the two twice a day, and after 5 days I'd evaluate where you are, and if they're not making good progress, then I would opt to look at doing something else with this antibiotic.
And what else would you do? What other antibiotic would you do?
I would look at something like, you'll have to get a hold of a veterinarian there or something like cefalexin, okay? Cefalexin is good soft tissue. It's used in dogs and cats all the time. It's used for skin issues, and that would be a perfect antibiotic if this is not going to do the job for me with the penicillin.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Okay, let us know how you make out.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All righty. So, okay, very good. That worked out well. If you have a question for Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com, give us a call right now. We'd like to hear from you. 347-637-3237. Again, that's 347-637-3237. When you call in, you'll hear a young lady say, if you'd like to speak with the host, please press 1. Press 1, and it'll let me know on the switchboard that you would like to have a question or you'd like to come on and ask Peter the question. Press 1. If you'd just like to call in and listen to the show, which you may already be doing, just kind of hang out. If you'd like to speak to us and have a question for Peter, press 1 when you call in. Again, one more time, 347-637-3237. And we're also answering questions from the chat room. And no, I have not. Well, someone also sent me an instant message in the chat room, Bill, and we can go to this question right now, Bill, since you're joining us in the chat room. We've got a fowlpox question. I had a late dinner and a football game, and oh, okay, this is Pam, not the hubby. And so I haven't got down to that yet, but I think it was, if I remember correctly, on our Facebook page, how do you go about treating for fowlpox?
Well, there is no treatment for it's strictly a preventative, and once you actually have it, then you start playing catch-up. The treatment, the preventive, is to vaccinate everybody. We do it generally once a year, usually try to get it done before the onset of mosquito season because that's the primary route of spread. Once you have it, there's a number of things that can work. It just depends. And then all you're trying to do is limit the severity of the disease on the bird. So what you would do is one thing that seems to work fairly well is to take some iodine once a day and saturate the scabs that come up with the iodine and let them fall off on themselves because the virus goes into the bird, looks like a mosquito bite, and it comes back out looking like a scab, just like it would on a human. And that scab is just loaded with all kinds of virus. So most people don't realize it, but iodine, when it comes in direct contact with a virus, which you would be doing in that case, you would be saturating that virus-laden scab with the iodine, and the iodine would kill that, let the scab fall off on its own. It may take several days. What you do have to watch out for is that these things can become infected. I've got a case in New York that I've been working on now for a couple of weeks, and I don't remember how long the bird had pox before it came to me, but we treated it with the iodine and didn't seem to be really getting anywhere. Folks sent me some pictures of it, and pretty much a good portion of the bird's comb was just one giant scab, and then from that I was able to just kind of decide for myself that this probably was not only pox but some sort of a bacterial infection at the same time. Stopped the iodine, went to a triple antibiotic ointment on the comb, and went to an antibiotic, and now the The scab has fallen completely off, and the comb seems to be healing and stuff. So you need to be careful with it from that standpoint. But there is no real outright treatment. In other words, nothing you're going to give to the bird in the water or anything else, and everything is going to be hunky-dory tomorrow morning. It isn't going to happen that way. Much better off to vaccinate to prevent it than it is to play catch-up afterward because, if you've got a lot of birds with it and you need to go around and put iodine on everybody once a day or a triple antibiotic ointment or something else, quite laborious, no question about that. But and you can do things to keep down the mosquito population on your place. No standing water anywhere, brackish water, dirty gutters, the old bird bath that hasn't been cleaned out in 5 years, full of leaves and junk and gunk and old tires, buckets, and all that kind of stuff. Water that stands around for 2, 3, 4, 5 days after a rainstorm is a great place for them to breed. Generally, most mosquitoes don't breed in fresh water. It's brackish, crappy-looking water, and that's where they're going to be. So if you can eliminate those things, keep the weeds cut down, keep the grass cut real low, you can do yourself a great amount of good by keeping a lot of mosquitoes away. You can't keep them all away. You can even take, if you want to try to keep it off the birds and you got a real bad problem, just take some garlic juice and put it on their heads. Rub the whole head from the lower part of the neck where the wattles and stuff are right up over top of the head and the comb. And the problem is probably going to have to do that once a day. And, again, more laborious than just going through vaccinating once and be done with it. So, but there are ways to do it. On the premise, I would look at using a product called Mosquito Barrier. I don't sell it. I used to. It's a great product. It's all natural, not overly expensive. A gallon runs about $90 delivered to you from California. I think that does somewhere around 5 acres. So, real good product. You can use it anywhere and everywhere, and it really. Mosquitoes don't like the smell that it gives off, the sulfur smell, and it repels them, actually. So those are the things that I would do preventative-wise, but treatment-wise, you're very, very limited.
Sorry about that. I put myself on mute for a second. She posted in the chat room that it's a dry spotting, very minimal, and basically confirming that she said as next spring she should vaccinate.
Yeah, I would vaccinate everybody. In other words, what you might find out is that birds that she might vaccinate in the springtime that have had the disease now may be what we call non-refractory. They won't respond to the vaccine, which is fine. But that way you make sure that by vaccinating everybody, either those that have had it and gotten over it in the spring and those that need to be vaccinated who have never been vaccinated, you cover all the bases. Because it's the time when you say, well, they were vaccinated, they had a natural outbreak, and they'll be okay. We know for sure in humans, that if you didn't have a real good case of chickenpox when you were a kid, you may have a good case of chickenpox when you're an adult. And the same thing basically applies, to chickens as well. Those that didn't have a good case of it, probably not going to have a whole lot of immunity coming around. And you'll know because once you do the vaccination, it's pretty simple. It's a wing web stab. So you find the web of the wing, which is in the second joint, the one that attaches to the body being the first, the next one out where the wing bends on the trailing edge of that from the underside, there's a flap of triangular-looking skin there, so to speak. And from the underside, you'll pull a few of the downy feathers out, equal to the diameter roughly of a nickel. You'll dip the stabber into the vaccine, and you'll put that stabber directly into that spot all the way through till the stabber touches the skin. And you won't do it gingerly. You'll just in and out real quick. The bird won't even flinch. You'll flinch more than the bird will because you're thinking about it. But other than that, and then they're done. In 10 days or so, you'll come back, and you'll look for what they call a take, and you'll start to see a scabbing up of the area where you put the vaccine, and that indicates that the vaccine's working and the bird has been properly vaccinated. Not pulling feathers, not pulling enough feathers, not being accurate, being sloppy equals a bird that isn't vaccinated. Vaccinated feathers is not a vaccinated bird. And then next year you'll have birds come down with it and wonder why. So, better off to do it right the first time around and get it over with.
Okay. No, Great information, and thank you very much, Bill and Pam, for that question. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. We are answering your questions that you posted on Facebook and Twitter and that you're calling in with. So there's a lot more to come, a lot more questions, and you too can call in if you have a question for Peter, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237, and we'll return right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
I hate to tell you this, folks, but look at the calendars. We're only about 60 days away from Christmas.
Ba 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 ba
All right, sorry, I just had to do that, but kind of a segue into, I understand why many of you dislike Black Friday. I get it. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. What are you going to go get that you don't already have or can even afford? But this year will be our second annual, very proud to announce, our second annual, we did this last year, it was a huge success, Black Australorp Friday sale. Yep, you heard it. Well, all of our sponsors got together. They came up with products with really deep discounts and some specials, and it was pretty successful, so we're going to do it again this year. I'll be reaching out to all of our sponsors to see what they want to offer for our listeners and Chicken Whisperer fans across the globe, and but it will be the Friday after Thanksgiving. It'll run Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, Cyber Monday. So, you know, most of those things out there, you know, you just don't want to fight the crowds, and you just, I'm all about my chickens. You know, this would be great if we could have a Black Friday with, you know, but I can get some stuff for my chickens that I need, egg cartons or hatching eggs or waters or feeders or medications or whatever the case may be. So, again, this year, we're going to have our second annual Black Australorp Friday sale, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and I'll be posting all about that as Black Friday gets here a little bit closer, so gotta love it. All righty, let me get back over here to the phone lines and bring Peter back on, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply, and let me get over here to our next question. We just talked about this within the last probably 30 days of you coming on, Doc, but I'm going to Cliffside at Chicken Ranch has this question, and a feed store employee told a friend not to feed scratch grains in the evening before very cold winter nights, but rather high protein. I feel pretty strongly about the warming effects of converting whole grain to glucose, which produces energy, as compared to protein building lean muscle, which would more effectively utilize that energy. But wanted to get your opinion, Doc, on that and what you say. You are a member from a previous show. You said you're not against it, but even if you can just get them to eat, even if it's their regular laying ration, before they go to roost, that even that can help produce a little internal body heat as they digest that through the night. What say you, my friend?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, I'm not a nutritionist by any stretch
right,
of the imagination, but, you know, having done this stuff for a long period of time, the idea of making sure as best you can to allow them to have access to all the food they can eat on a cold night before they go to roost assures that they will at least be throwing off some natural body heat through the digestive process of the feed. You know, what I would like to see I'm not a big fan of the scratch grains.
Yep.
So I would prefer...
You and I both.
I would prefer to see... again, the normal feed that they're feeding the bird, whether it be layer feeder or otherwise, and supplement that with some of the black oilers, and supplement that with a little bit of corn, and I think that should be sufficient. I don't think you can ever give them really enough food that just the heat that they're going to throw off, because they're only going to eat so much anyway. And but it will help, you know, generate heat. That's why. One of the things that we would do, both on a commercial basis and on a small holder backyard flock or otherwise in the summertime, when you've got these stifling temperatures of over, you know, high 90s, low 100s, just dog days of summer, you would try to withhold the feed during the heat of the day and feed later in the day when the sun goes down, or make sure that the area that the birds are feeding in and have access to lounge around in is shaded, and feed early in the morning, but nothing in between. Just pull the feed. Don't even give them anything, so that they're not digesting that feed and in the heat of the day and producing more heat in a body that's already under stress. So it works just the opposite way for us than in the summertime. We're going to want to, so to speak, jam them up with food as much as we can. And they'll eat to their capacity, till they've had enough, and then they'll go to roost, and they'll give off heat all throughout the night, basically, you know, to to help warm. But I'm not a big fan of scratch grains. Sorry, just the way I feel yep. about it, and from what I've seen over the years, I don't think there's enough in it energy-wise. I think you're much better off with the other combination. If you don't want to feed the corn and the black oilers, just give them your normal feed. Just make sure that they have plenty of access to water and feed at that time, and they should consume enough of both to digest that food really well over the evening hours and into the night, and certainly help warm up the coop. Should make a big difference.
Okay, perfect. Very, very, very good. Got one here from Kathleen. She is now out in Texas. She says, having chickens in the Northeast for the past 4 years, I thought I had a good knowledge about them. Down here in Texas, I've had hens since January, and they haven't even started to lay. Only six in a chicken tractor, good balanced diet, no eggs. What gives? So we're looking at 10 months now. I don't have the age of the chickens. I don't have the information of were these chickens brought with her from the Northeast to Texas. I don't have the breed. I have nothing except for she's had chickens for 4 years in the Northeast with no problems. Now she's in Texas. So kind of vague, not a lot of information for you, Doc, but just if someone's having some non-egg-laying chickens, maybe where to start off with first.
Well, it's a tough question to answer directly and definitively, but we can throw some things out there for to look at. Number one, we don't know what breed it is. Number two, we don't know if it's a high-producing breed or a low-producing breed, and therein makes a big difference, okay? The amount of daylight that they have, the type of food that they have, whether there's any coccidiosis or ever has been any coccidiosis, any other intestinal or health issues, how much food they're actually consuming, parasites, external, internal. We don't have any access to that total information. But obviously something is going on. I would probably try to stimulate these guys with some artificial light. I think that it's very possible to kickstart this whole thing. May even look at supplementing them to getting them going. Years and years and years and years and years ago, we used to have what they used to call terramycin egg formula, which was nothing more than oxytetracycline at a very low dose and a very concentrated vitamin pack all in one. And that was used very effectively to help stimulate birds to get into production. I think it had more to do with the vitamins and minerals and stuff that were in the package rather than the terramycin itself. The terramycin itself, its value would be if there were any underlying little bacterial issues that it might clean them up and push them into production. But I'd probably take a more natural approach maybe. Some of the things we've been talking about, there's something possibly lacking in their diet. That's another issue that you can look at. But I would certainly, like an alite amino acid concentrate mixed with maybe some Vitapro B and a little bit of Replimin liquid, throw it all together in a gallon of water and give it to them day in, day out for about a week, and then every 3 days a week after that, and see if that doesn't motivate them to get into production and stimulate them with some lights at the same time. I don't know what a day length is, but it's getting shorter and shorter here as we talk.
Mm-hmm.
I think that daylight savings time here is what, this coming weekend or so? I can't remember when it trips, but it's heard something on the TV tonight about it, and wasn't paying that much attention to it. I can't tell you when it takes place, but when it does, it'll change things around. So, but daylight
even
is
right now here, Doc. Even right now here, I mean, it's. We're probably getting less than 12 hours of daylight a day, even right now. Here we're in the Northeast Georgia area, Atlanta.
We're not getting that either. And I know I get up 6 o'clock generally every morning, and sometimes earlier. And 6 o'clock in the morning is pitch dark here. It's by 6 o'clock at night. You're looking at pretty much the same thing. So we're in pretty much the same boat. So I would stimulate them with some lights, try to add maybe about 15, 20 minutes to a half an hour. At this point, it doesn't really matter. If they're 10 months old, they're way beyond the point where they should have started laying something. And I have a sneaky suspicion it's a combination of lighting and supplementation. That's just my gut feeling on it. Don't know no more about it than that. Couldn't put my finger on it 100%. You know, knowing what I know, that's the direction I would head off into, right, wrong, or indifferent. Let's put it this way. Whatever she's doing now isn't working, so anything could be an improvement.
Yeah,
you know, she wants to keep in touch with me. We, you know, we can try to help her along. All she needs to do is send me an email at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com and just say that she asked a question here and keep us informed what she's doing, what she isn't doing, what, you know, and so on. But I would get them up to, you know, force them out to 14 hours of daylight and see if that doesn't just get them going. See if you can't add that. I know it's getting late in the season, so I would probably just bump them up and see what happens.
Sounds good. Casey's got a question. How can I get the feathers to grow in on the butts of my chicks? I just got some new Cochin chicks, and two of them have no under-the-butt feathers. Now, again, I don't have the age. I think she's using the terminology chicks.
Yep.
She's claiming she just got some new Cochin chicks, but, again, she just used the term chicks, so we're going to assume chicks here, Doc. I don't have any other information of that, but no feathers under the vent.
Yeah, and we don't have a whole ton of information to go on here, but you have to look at this, and we'll assume, again, that this is probably, could be a couple different things for sure. We're going to assume that there's no parasites, because she's not mentioning them, and I think if they were there, she'd probably say so. Secondly, nutritional. Thirdly, genetics or a combination of genetics and nutrition. Certainly, coccidiosis or any kind of loose dropping situation could keep them from getting enough protein, vitamins, minerals, amino acids. Amino acids are extremely important. They're the building blocks of life. Without them, nothing lives. So, you know, if there's something in the feed that's short for these particular two, depends on whether or not these birds were, you know, how well they hatched out. You know, we talked about, you know, when we look at a baby chick, we think that it's, you know, it's all grown. It's all finished growing. It's, you know, it's 21 days in the egg, and now it's out, and we have a complete chick. No, we don't. We've got a chick that has a very immature intestinal tract, and if you don't take care of that intestinal tract, you end up with a chick that doesn't do well. That's where we start this stuff of failure to thrive. I'm not saying these two are failure to thrive, but they're certainly failure to feather. And I think you can push those feathers out with some good nutrition and some good supplementation. Again, the A-light amino acid concentrate. You know, I only mention these things because we know they work. How many times have we done it on the show and that kind of stuff, you know? And it's not that I'm trying to push anything on anybody. I don't do that. But these products actually work. And so, you know, A-light amino acid, Vitapro B, and the Replimin liquid, those three at least, do an excellent job of helping to push out feathers and, in a lot of cases, fertility and those kinds of things. So I think that's where I'd start, certainly, if they were mine, and go with it from there. She didn't mention a picking problem, so I don't think it's a picking issue. But we see it from time to time. Birds just don't put on feathers in the right spot, in the right place. I've seen all kinds of different birds, parrots and so on and so forth, that go into these situations of picking their own feathers and some of it's stress. I would observe these birds, too, and see how well they eat. Just stand around out of the picture and observe them. Do they have enough feeder space? Are the other birds that are in with them keeping them away from the feeder, intimidating them, that kind of thing? Is that what's going on? So a lot of you have to be like a detective to try to figure out, you know, just what's going on. And you know, sometimes things just happen, you know. There's no rhyme, reason, or explanation for why it happened. You just have to try to fix things, you know. You know, we had a bird here. I don't know if I mentioned it last time on the last show or not, but I'll mention it again. Tammy went out to the coop the other morning and found it laying on its side. It was fine the other day when the door was closed, and now it can't get up. Can't seem to move its legs, and nobody knows what happened to it. Looked it over from head to toe. Don't look like it hit anything, but it wasn't going anywhere. And, you know, we got the aspirin out and put some aspirin into it, and by noontime was standing up, and today you couldn't tell which one it was. So things happen. Who knows? And don't know why it happened. Don't know how it happened. And but it happens. So that's the direction I'd head in with that one.
Okay, great. It looks like we have another caller that's called in from the Atlanta area. Area code 678. Area code 678. You're live on the air with the Chicken Whisperer and the Chicken Doctor. Please state your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hey, my name is Dorothy, and I'm calling from Bethlehem, Georgia.
Bethlehem. Okay, great. And what's your question for Peter?
Well, we bought this little chick at the feed store, and we brought her home in about a week, maybe not even a week after she was here. We kept her separate from our larger chicken. She was in her own little pen, and it seemed like she started having trouble standing up. And so now we still have her. Somebody suggested Merrick's, but they also told me that she would have been dead by now, since she seems to have this condition for the last 5 days. So now I have her in my hallway in a cage, and I keep her propped up with like a donut, but she does not seem to be able to stand.
Now, let's go back and need a little bit more information. The bird's been having this problem for 5 days. How old is the bird?
Not really sure. We're thinking she's probably at least 3 months, I want to say.
Okay, so it's not really a chick. She's okay.
She's got, yeah, she's got her color. She's a bantam. I forgot exactly what particular type of bantam. I think she's a, not a Millie Floor, but the other one with the spots.
Okay. All right. What have you done?
Well, I've been hand-feeding her. She eats. She has no problem with that. You know, she'll eat anything I give her. She's getting quite spoiled, probably. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't know what to treat her with.
Okay. Well, start with this, something you can do relatively quickly, and it isn't going to break the bank for sure. But there's two things that I would consider doing right off the bat. One is... What do you figure that she weighs roughly?
Oof.
Give me an idea, just a rough idea about it.
I'm thinking maybe 12 ounces, possibly 12 ounces.
Right. Okay. All right. I would give her 181 milligram. I like the Bayer brand aspirin, but you can do whatever you choose. They're the gold standard as far as I'm concerned. And I'd give her one of those three times a day to start with. And see if that doesn't. When she sits down, how does she present herself?
Well, that's the thing. She just flops over.
Okay.
If I don't have her propped up in this donut,
mm-hmm.
she just
so
falls
when she flops
over.
When she flops over, what's the position of her legs? Where is her breast in relation to the legs?
Well, her breast and her face or her head would be completely down.
Mm-hmm.
In front of her.
Okay.
And her legs are just in, sometimes, in, like the last time she tried to stand, the last time she actually got up,
mm-hmm.
she had one leg straight out, straight under her, and the other one was all the way out to the right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds to me, and certainly I don't have a crystal ball and I cannot tell you definitively, but it has all of the earmarks of Merrick's. Whoever told you that she would be dead by now doesn't know what they're talking about. Maybe, maybe not. Obviously not. The bird's still alive. So you can't rule Merrick's in or out based on that. But what you can do is make some judgmental assumptions. And one would be the way the bird presents herself to you, laying on the side, both legs out, one leg back, one leg forward, or laying upright on the breast, one leg forward, one leg back. Those are classic symptoms of Merrick's disease. Okay?
Uh-huh, because I have seen her do that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. Am I right? Who knows? You know, you can try this and see. It depends on how much time and effort you want to put into it. You run about, at best, a 50-50 chance of survival. You know, when I say survival, a bird that can stand up and walk and do all the things that a bird would normally do. You know, and after that, they have a tendency to go downhill. If let's assume for the moment that this is Merrick's, can have a tendency to get worse than it really is now. It just depends on what other organs it will attack other than the nerves that control the, you know, the head, neck, and the legs and the wings.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about tumors in this type of a situation where, and again, we're making this assumption, we're not talking about tumors like we would in humans. Usually when we talk about tumors in humans with cancer and stuff, we're looking at, you know, lemons, grapefruits, that kind of stuff in size. This is an enlargement of the nerves that control the legs. And if you were to look at this bird on a post-mortem examination, the spine runs straight down the middle and comes to an area that's in between the legs and the kidneys, and it's called the brachial plexus. For simplicity's sake, I always call it the junction box because it's where the nerves come down and branch off there, go to the wings and the legs. And it's at that juncture coming off of there where these nerves are that they become enlarged and they start to look, instead of like a piece of thread, they look like about twice the size of a number two lead pencil lead. And that's what we call a tumor in that particular thing. Sometimes they'll have little petechial marks, little red spots on them. So you would only know that basically by doing a post-mortem examination. But that's what we're looking at when we look at that. When we start looking at it being more what we call visceral, we start looking at much larger type tumors growing anywhere in the body cavity, on the liver, and that kind of stuff. So it does occur, and it depends on whether it jumps to that, whether she'll, you know, survive or not. Another problem associated with this is that, assuming, again, that this is Marex, the bird sheds the virus for life, so therefore, even if this bird were to make a 100% recovery running around, she's still a threat to the rest of the birds in the flock, okay, from that standpoint. One other thing you can do to help this bird recover, if you so choose to do, is go to the health food store and get curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, and you want that to have in it a product called Bioperine, B-I-O-P-E-R-I-N-E. You want to get the combination of the two as close to 1,000 milligrams as you can. And I know this bird is relatively small, but spread it out over the course of a day. You want to get one in the morning, one at noon, and one later in the day. And just to make it easy for you, if you decide to take this route, whether you use the aspirin or use the aspirin in conjunction with the curcumin, it's real easy to do. The big giant hole in the back of her throat is where she eats. So if you were to open her mouth, you look at the anatomical landmarks, you got the tongue directly behind the tongue and the floor of the mouth, you have the glottis. If you do open the mouth, you'll see it. It'll open and close as she breathes. You couldn't get this capsule down there. It's so huge. And you couldn't get the aspirin down there either. You'd have to really work at it. But that big giant dark hole in the back, that's where you want to be. And you'll just push it all the way down there, just like you would a dog or a cat, hold her mouth shut, massage her throat, and she'll swallow it. You can't choke the bird. She may not like it. If you don't do it properly, she may spit it back out, so to speak. But you can't choke her to death with it. Okay. The only way you can choke her is to block that glottis, which is, people call it the air hole, call it what you want, but the glottis, that's the opening to the trachea. If you close that off, they'd be dead in seconds.
Right.
My point being, you can't get these things in there. Okay. You really don't have to worry about that kind. A lot of people are afraid because they're afraid to choke them to death. That's not going to happen as a general rule, not unless you're very good at getting those large, large things in a teeny, teeny, teeny hole, especially a bird that's 3 months old. So those are your options from my perspective. And I think, you know, that's certainly up to you what you want to do.
So with the aspirin, would I crush it and
No, don't crush anything. Just take the aspirin. They're very, very tiny.
Yeah, they are.
Usually they're enteric-coated, and just push it all the way down the back of her throat with your finger. So you can put your finger back down her throat. You're not going to hurt her.
Right.
See, because that's where she eats. Well, they eat and breathe in two different places.
Uh-huh.
That's why you can't choke her to death that way. Now, different story if you were trying to feed her liquid, and the liquid backed up into her mouth. She tried to breathe, and she sucked the liquid down into the to the glottis through the and down into the trachea. More than likely, she'll die within seconds.
Right.
But that's not going to happen with these things. You're just going to push them down the back of the throat as efficiently and quickly as you can. If the capsule starts to stick, take a little bit of fresh white bread, and you can empty the capsule out into that, roll it up into a little ball, shove it down the back of the throat, and be done with it.
Mm. Okay. I'll definitely I'll definitely look for the curcumin.
Yeah, you can usually find any store like a Vitamin Shop or someplace like that. I only mention them because we have one here locally, but you should be able to find it there. But I would start the aspirin just as soon as I could. And like I said, about 50-50.
Okay, I will definitely try the aspirin
first
because I believe I have some of those.
Yeah, and even if you don't have the 81, take a big one and just cut it into quarters. You're not going to hurt it. They're very tolerant of aspirin. It's used widely in chickens. Commercial poultry industry uses it in a liquid form all the time.
You know, I looked this up today on the internet, and somebody had mentioned hypericum, which would be.
Yeah, you could get that. You want to use about a 30C tablet.
Uh-huh.
And you want to give one of those a day. The problem with it is that it can be toxic. So if you're going to use the hypericum, which is, St. John's wort, I think.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to take that. You want a 30C tablet, and you want to give one of those a day, and you want to give that until she gets better. Now, I have done this with a gal out in Ohio, and we use the hypericum first, and because it's toxic or can be toxic and you don't want to give it long term, as soon as the bird started to make a recovery, we went right to the curcumin, and to this day the bird has recovered. So you can stand a chance of doing that. So if you can get that, that'll work too.
If she survives this, can we inoculate her then, or no, we can't?
Well, let me explain that too. Even if the birds, all your birds were vaccinated, I wouldn't necessarily be necessary to vaccinate her. You could. It's not going to hurt her at all. May actually do some good. What I would do is do all of the other birds that you have, okay, and that will protect them as a general rule from getting the disease in the form that she has it, but it will not prevent them from becoming infected and shedding the virus themselves.
Okay.
They will shed the vaccine virus, which is no big deal because it's not an actual Marek's virus, so it's not going to give any other bird the disease, but it will not stop the birds from becoming infected with a natural field strain is what she has, or what we think she has, okay?
Yeah.
And they'll all shed it. So at that point, it doesn't matter as long as everybody's vaccinated.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
Okay, very good. If you want to call in, you will go to the top of the list, 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. If you have a question for Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply, again, if you call in, you'll go to the top of the list. We've got about 30 minutes left, so I'm going to kind of start scanning through these and picking some ones that are out maybe a little bit more pertinent for us for the show, and then if we have some time, we can get back to the other ones, maybe ones that are a little bit more serious. Dana posted on our Facebook page, do you treat sour crop with apple cider vinegar, or is there another way?
It depends on what's causing it. I certainly wouldn't mind starting there, using the apple cider vinegar, and you can use copper sulfate, and then you can use nystatin if it's not getting any better with the other two. You can use either one of them as a starting point, to making it better. Apple cider vinegar and/or the copper sulfate. And to use the copper sulfate, you want to use an acidified copper sulfate.
Mm-hmm. Still there?
Yep.
Okay, my phone is breaking up a little bit, so I was going to try to call in using the big switchboard and my everything else, but I didn't have the bandwidth here where I'm at since I'm on the road, so I had to do it the old-fashioned way. So.
Wow.
All righty, so thank you. You're just breaking up a little bit. So, okay, so that's the sauerkraut. Let me scroll down here again, weeding through these here. This is a good one here coming up. Hang on, where'd it go? Must have scrolled up on me just a second, Peter. I'm trying to get these and weed these out and get
Take
the good ones on here for you.
Take your time.
Here we go. I adopted two little 16-week-old bantams who were living in a small, dirty, muddy area. Not clean at all. Their feet are very flaky and scaly and seem sore when they walk. I am assuming they may have lead mites. What is the best treatment, and is this contagious to my other chickens?
Okay. Well, scaly leg mites, is it contagious to other chickens? Yes. And it's a slow deal. It's not something where, when I say a slow deal, it's very slow spreading from bird to bird, but it does. And so you need to address it as quickly as possible. Now, we've been through this before as well, and, you know, talking about it and so on. But the one of the things, you, in my opinion, you don't want to do is all these cockamamie things that they have on some of these websites about used motor oil and all these other things. While some of these things certainly do work, you want to try to take care of this about as quickly as possible. The sooner the better, like right now. And so because these are just like chiggers on humans, so to speak. They're eating the flesh under the skin. And, you know, it's very uncomfortable and can be very painful for the birds the longer it goes on. So you're going to want to get this thing resolved as quickly as possible. The methodology that I like, that I think works the best, is a 10% permethrin mix mixed up, and we have specific directions here we give out with our product that we sell, and you'll get a small tote that will allow you to have sufficient permethrin water in it to dip the bird up until their thighs. And you're going to take that bird and you're going to put it into this permethrin mix, and you're going to leave it in there for about a minute, minute and a half, and then you're going to take it out. And you're going to do every bird that way. You can just throw them on the ground and let them shake it off. And then you're going to come back in 10 days, do it again to make sure that everything is done. You can take the permethrin mix, strain it with a stocking or whatever to get any manure and dirt and feathers and gunk out of it, and then put it in a pump-up garden sprayer and spray as much of the coop as you can. You want to let all the birds outside and spray the roosts, and because that's basically where they're going to be hanging out, but every little nook and cranny around the roost that you can, and every place that you can, and you can let the birds back in as soon as it's relatively dry. It doesn't have to be, 100% dry, but you don't want to have any standing puddles of the permethrin mix that the birds will be standing in or have access to or go over and drink or anything like that. And so you get a dual-purpose use out of the product, one to do the birds' legs and the other to do the roost and adjoining areas that you see fit to do. And you might have to come back in and when you come back in and do it again in 10 days, go back and do the roost all over again. And that seems to work pretty well. We've been very successful with that. And then after you get rid of the mites, you're still going to have these scales that are raised and stuff, and I would get a good lanolin-based udder cream, maybe something like Bag Balm. I happen to like one called Udder Cream. It used to be sold in Walmart and other places. And just rub that into those scales and stuff, and they should eventually come back if they're not too far gone, to some sort of reasonable look on the bird's legs. So that's what I would do.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Let's see. We have Exceptional Friends here. Is Diatomaceous Earth a safe product for chickens, and in what uses? I used it on my Polish chickens as we saw lice on one of our chickens we bought. So everyone in quarantine got the treatment. Well, the next day after using diatomaceous earth, my Polish is having a hard time breathing. He is wheezy. His eyes are swollen. I took a Q-tip with warm water and wiped his eyes and nostrils. I have a humidifier in with him in my bedroom where it's quiet. I syringe feed him medicated water and pureed foods. What else should I do? He was doing great after 2 days, but last night is doing worse, and today is doing better. Thank you in advance for your help, Peter. So first we have, is diatomaceous earth safe? And it may be completely unrelated, but they used it on a Polish, and now it was wheezing, having breathing problems, and the eyes swollen. And then she's syringe feeding him, and he gets better, and then he gets worse, and then he gets better again. Sounds like maybe a multitude of things.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, sometimes, one thing will beget another. So, in other words, there may have been some underlying factors there that were exacerbated, made worse by the diatomaceous earth. So let's go back and look. Is diatomaceous earth, safe for birds? Yeah, it's been used for eons for birds and other animals. I don't know where she got her diatomaceous earth. I don't know, what percent of silica it has in it. Usually you want to get something, about a half a percent or so, as far as that's concerned. So, yeah, it is safe. I'm still not a big fan of it. I'm not a fan of any of the powders, for that matter. And I know there are people that will, think that they're just wonderful. But for the most part, most of the powders are not healthy for humans. I don't care what the label says. And if she's trying to get rid of lice and might be far better off to try the permethrin sprays, they have a residual effect. The diatomaceous earth has a negative effect on the quality of the feathers by the more the birds take a bath in the stuff. If you're making little dust boxes for the birds to dust themselves in, as they roll around in it and fluff it all up, it's going to get into the air, and birds are going to, even if it's just dusting the bird, it gets everywhere, and as they flap their wings, it gets around, and the bird gets a little bit too much in their eyes, or they breathe a little bit too much in, certainly can cause a respiratory issue, and I think that's probably part of what's going on, and maybe it's all of what's going on. So from that standpoint, that's one of the reasons I don't like these things. And you get into seven dust, you start getting into some things down that are more toxic, and then you're handling them, and the birds are, it's just not a good situation. I don't like the powders, never will, never have. And that's personal preference maybe, but I think people sometimes have a tendency, and I know I'll probably shoot myself in the foot with this statement, but try to take the least expensive way out. And I don't mean that necessarily in this case, but some people use a diatomaceous earth because they don't want to use chemicals. I get it. I understand that. But you also, there's a trade-off in most of these things. In the last conversation about the possible Merrick's case, she talked about using Hypericum. Great, but if you don't know how to give it and you give it too long, you can kill the bird with it. Very possible to do that. It can be toxic, and the idea is to give it till it just starts to recover, and then you hope that you've given it long enough and it's going to recover. I've used it in conjunction with the curcumin. As the bird really started to get better, we stopped that and came along with the curcumin. So there are trade-offs to almost everything you do. Very few times do you come across and have something that is not going to have some sort of detrimental effect somewhere along the line, and therein lies the problem with diatomaceous earth, 7, or any other of these dusts that are out there. So I would probably take this bird that's got the sneezes, and I don't think it requires an antibiotic, but I think I would get some human eyewash, and I would get a syringe without a needle and pull some of it up, have somebody help her hold the bird, and I would pull the bottom eyelid and the top eyelid separately, and just gently put a stream of this into the eye, top and bottom, wash it out, do both sides the same way. You can take that same solution, and as long as it's a solution that's boric acid-based, you can take that and you could do some nasal flushing with it, okay? I don't think that requires to use an antibiotic at this point in time. It seems to me like just too much of the stuff got here, there, and yonder. So, and again, if a lot of this gets down at the bird's trachea, there really isn't a way for the bird to get this stuff out. It's not an area that has any musculature to move things up and down. That's why, you know, when they get bronchitis and they get mucus in the trachea, or they get laryngotracheitis and they get blood in the trachea and mucus on top of that, that's why they die, because they can't cough it up. You know, they can sling their head around and try to get it out, but they can't cough like you and I do. They may get that little squeaky hiccup thing they do, but that's not a cough. There's no musculature. There's no diaphragm. There's no nothing. They don't throw up like you and I do. They don't have any mechanism to do that either. So, you know, therein lies some of these problems, but I would flush the nostrils out with it. And the way you're going to do that is you're going to open bird's mouth. You're going to take a number two pencil or a wooden dowel of same diameter, and you're going to put it in the bird's mouth sideways, so you keep the bird's mouth open, head down, mouth open. You're going to pull up some of this material in a syringe without a needle on it, and you're going to just gently back flush it through each nostril and let it run out the top of the mouth. I do that once a day and see if that makes a difference. If that doesn't make a difference, you might want to change to an antibiotic of some sort after that. Okay. But that's what I would do with that one.
Okay. Thank you very much. I've got two good ones here I picked out. One comes to us from Hannah. I have two layer hens that drag their abdomen. It's full of fluid. I checked the vent for a stuck egg and could not find one. I was going to put them down because it looked very painful. It's been weeks now, and they get around just fine, but the abdomen is still very swollen. I read somewhere that there could be a fluid spillage over from the liver that was uncurable. Can you maybe explain?
This is certainly I can't see these birds, okay?
Right, right.
But let's assume for the moment that they're not internal layers, okay? And there's a difference between an internal layer and an egg-bound bird. Okay, an egg-bound bird generally has an egg that's stuck in the oviduct. Can have more than one egg stuck there. Can have an egg and some ovums stuck there. But you generally are not going to feel them as much in the abdominal cavity itself as you would a bird that is an internal layer, where they're dropping either whole eggs or the ovum, which would be the yolk, into the body cavity on a daily basis or every other day or whatever their laying cycle was. You will notice some of these things, like she is, the belly's dragging the ground. They start to walk more upright. And the reason they start to walk more upright is that their lungs are fixed and the body cavity starts to fill up with fluid, whether it be egg yolk or whether it be fluid from the veins. I would say that if this is fluid in the body cavity rather than yolk material, this is probably coming from the venous system. It can be a form of congestive heart failure. It can be caused by a number of different things. It's also known as ascites, and this is an osmotic pressure differential in the venous system, so you get venous material. It's an amber-colored fluid leaking from the veins into the body cavity. So they start to walk more upright like a penguin or a duck, and their legs start to spread out a little bit, and like this one's saying, the belly's dragging the ground. If you can find out what's causing it, you can probably fix it. If you can't find out what's causing it, then it's probably not something that ends up at the end of the day being survivable. The only option that they have at this point is to try to drain the body cavity. And the way you would drain the body cavity is relatively simple. If you have somebody hold the bird with the wings up and you hold the body steady, take your finger and go to the middle of the bird's body where the rib cage is and run your finger down the body of the bird towards the keel bone, and then let your fingers bounce along on the ribs as you go towards the back of the bird. So you're moving from the underside of the bird's body down towards the keel bone and then back towards the vent, and feel for the last rib. Make sure that you're about 3/4 of the way down from the side of the bird, so that you're more under the bird but not totally under the bird, and go about a half an inch past that last rib and take a short, large-gauge needle, something about an 18-gauge quarter, 18-gauge 3/8, and insert that needle there and see what you let out of it. You want to use, make sure you use a short needle because in that general area, if you were to do a post-mortem on this bird, the first thing you're going to see when you open the bird up is the liver. And if you stick that needle into the liver, you're going to have a dead bird. But it's doable. It's easily done. It's not a big deal if you want to go 3/4 of an inch past that last rib. But you want to make sure you're a good 3/4 of the way under the bird. Put the needle in and see what you get out. I have gotten in excess of 200 milliliters of fluid out of birds in the past myself, and I've had other customers that have gotten way more than that out of their birds. So she can do that. So what causes it? This, again, could be right ventricular heart failure in the bird itself, so we have a problem with the heart. Very odd to find two birds the same, with the same problem. So I'm going to look at this as being some sort of an issue of something that they might have eaten. And one of those things would be salt. Excessive salt in the diet causes this particular condition. And so feeding cat food, dog food, anything in a high salt type of a diet, dietary increase, even if the feed is mixed wrong and has too much salt in it, can cause this particular condition in birds. You know, like I said, sometimes fatal, sometimes not. Depends on if this is the actual thing that's causing it. If this is a bird that's an internal layer, there's nothing you can do at this point. They're way too far gone to even try to mess with it, and at that point somebody has to make a decision as to which direction they're going to head in. But those are the two options that I see from where I'm sitting without even having an opportunity to, you know, to look at the bird. But it's not that common, but it's not that uncommon either. We've talked about it before on the show. People have called in about it before and so on, and I've helped people over the years, directed them on how to do it. It isn't necessarily a big deal, but you need a big bore needle, and an 18-gauge is fairly big. If you've got a 16 that's short, you don't want anything real long because no matter how good you are, no matter who you are, before you know it, you'll have that thing buried in the liver, and you'll have a dead bird, and the whole thing will be for naught. Mm-hmm. So I would look for a short-gauge needle and try it that way and see what happens.
Okay, great information. I think that's probably where you were headed, so I picked that one out especially for you. We've got another caller on hold from Florida. Let's go ahead and go to the phone line. She's also in the chat room, area code 321. I believe it's Becca Boo. I've met her personally. She was very gracious to let me and Jen when we were on the road on a Chicken Whisperer tour from to her home. She fed us a good meal, and then we went on our way. So welcome to the show, Becca. What's your question for Peter Brown?
Thanks for having me. Can you guys hear me?
Yep,
absolutely.
Okay, great. I called in or actually posted a question on Facebook, and Peter answered it for me a couple months ago. It was about a rescue chicken and what are the things you would do to get it ready if you were going to choose to integrate it with your flock. And I know that that's not something that, you know, is always recommended, and it could be dangerous, so I appreciated all of the, you know, the heads up and information. Just to summarize, basically somebody abandoned a small flock of chickens in the woods near a business, and by the time I was contacted, there was one surviving chicken who had survived in the woods for a month. By the time we were able to capture this chicken, I got my question answered like that Monday. I did Wazine, I did the Ampril, I did Valbazin, I did a Permethrin dip, so I did a lot of, you know, almost everything
Peter
recommended, and I spaced it out because she was quarantined for over a month, so I kind of chose which one I wanted to do first. I think he recommended doing Wazine first, and then I kind of went from there with all the great information, and there was directions for each thing that I ordered from the First Aid Vet supply, so that was all great. She's been integrated with the flock for a month now. Everything is going really well, but I am, you know, keeping an eye on them because that was another thing Peter recommended, was make sure, you know, you're watching just in case she does bring something into your flock. And I don't know if this is because I'm watching very closely, but I have noticed, and it's not one chicken in particular, but a little bit of yawning, but I know that I've seen them do that before, and I know that there is something called a gape worm. So I was curious just, how often do chickens yawn versus if I'm noticing it, does that mean that they may have, you know, have a tapeworm and I need to treat for that? Just kind of looking for some guidance there.
Depends on how tired they are. Smart aleck, aren't I? good question, actually. I don't know I can tell you, you know, how often they do. But
yes.
I would, you know, if you see it, what you would consider, you know, more often than normal, even so that you've just brought it up, I think one of the things to do is to take a look-see in their mouth and see if you can see anything. Secondly, you might want to take a cotton swab and put it right into the trachea real quick, gently but quickly, and see if you can get anything you know, out of the trachea itself. And you know, just take it from there. And you know, you're observant, obviously, because a lot of people probably wouldn't have picked up on this, and see what you can see, whether you see anything or not, and you get anything, any blood or you know, serious blood or whatever. The worms are relatively small, usually engorged with blood. Sometimes you'll see the male and the female mating, and they'll form a Y. They're not that common, but they certain areas of the country seem to have more trouble with it than others. If it continues on, and you want to try something, I would probably try some ivermectin. 1 to 2 drops directly down the throat, and see if it stops it. You know, see if there's any difference. But I'd certainly go and you know, observe a bird. When you see it yawn, pick it up, open the mouth, get a small, like one of these mag lights that you can adjust the beam on, and look all down the back of the throat. It could be something else. You know, maybe there's some canker going on. Who knows? You know, maybe there's some other growth or something going on in the throat or in the mouth. So check everything as best you can. If you take a bird that you can see that you don't think has yawned, and you pick it up and you check its mouth and consider it normal, then you can go look at one that's yawning and look for any differences in the two, because pretty much one mouth is like the other. And if it were canker, you'd be looking for a little yellow to orange yellow buttons growing anywhere in the mouth, on the tongue, over the glottis, down the back of the throat, roof of the mouth, in the corners of the mouth, edges of the beak, on the tongue, anywhere in there. And, you know, so you look around, see what you see. If you don't see anything, then you have to make a decision as to whether or not you want to try the ivermectin. But, you know, if I couldn't find anything and it was bothering me, I think that's the route I would take. It's not going to be something that's going to be detrimental to the birds. Can't hurt them a bit. So I would do that, and I would do it once, and if I felt like I was getting a response to it, I'd come back and do that same thing again in 10 days.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure. Let us know how you make out.
All right, I will.
Okay.
All right, and we're going to do one more here. I think we've got time for this one as well, and it is it's a good one. Let me go ahead and pull it up here, something that a lot of people may have thought of. Julie says on our Facebook page, I have a relative who believes it is okay to have her chickens only free range without ever giving them any feed at all. Now, we live on Cape Cod where the ground freezes, so no worms and the vegetation dies off. I free range too, but I also feed as well. But I also feed them. What do you say? Should she also feed during the colder months? So just strictly free range. There you go, girls. Have a good time. Good luck to you. What do you think?
Well, I mean, certainly from my perspective, it's not something that I would do. I don't recommend it. you know, they're way further north than I am, so their winter's a lot harsher than they are here. And then, you know, free-ranging, I don't believe they're going to have very much out there to, even vegetation-wise, come, you know, December, January. And so... You know, and they get some real bitter cold, you know, weather up that way. I know I go to Springfield every January, and God only knows what's going to happen when you get there. I mean, we've had everything from, you know, snow to temperatures are so cold. It was so cold in the building you had to have hat and gloves and everything else on and try to do business at the same time, coat. And so you know, they have to have some mechanism to keep themselves warm, and part of that is nutritional. And if they're not getting enough feed to maintain body temperature, you know, they're going to end up, you know, going into shock or something like that. We talked about that not too long ago. We talked, we had some questions about that. And like I said, it's the window of opportunity to keep for a bird succumbing to heat is a lot narrower than one succumbing to the cold. But if you're not, you know, nutritionally up and you're not producing that body heat and you're in a coop that's not heated and you, you know, are being undernourished, you know, I don't see how it can possibly do anything, any good for anybody. To me, personally, I think it's cruel. That's my personal opinion. And, you know, I think a person that does that, you know, maybe we ought to do the same thing to her. Maybe we ought to put her outside in shorts and a tank top in the wintertime and tell her to go forage for herself. I don't know. well, I know that's smart-assy, but yeah. it's cruel to put an animal like that outside and let it forage for itself in a very harsh environment. I would love to know if it's something that she's just decided to do now or something that she's been doing for a long time. And, you know, there has to be some sort of nutritional supplement along the way. I cannot see these birds surviving 24/7 outside, or even, you know, whatever time they do spend outside in the wintertime in bitter cold, standing around waiting for something to eat. I can't see it. I can't see them. Can't see them surviving long term. So she's either supplementing with something somewhere along the line, or this is the first time she's doing it and she's attempting to do it. I don't know. I don't have all those answers, but
I would at least hope that she's got, since she didn't say anything about providing them water either. So maybe she does have waterers out there, but just doesn't go and buy any feed from the store and just says, oh, they'll eat plants and leaves and bugs, and they'll be fine. Hopefully she's at least providing them with a clean water source. But
yeah, and, you know, in the summertime, I may subscribe to that, you know, saying, okay, fine, you know, if they're outside from sun up to sundown, you know, and they're hungry, they'll forage, they'll dig, they'll get some worms, they'll get some bugs, they'll find some vegetation that they can eat and everything else. Will it be something where they'll be top egg producers? Probably not. You know, will they put on a lot of weight? Probably not. And therein lies another problem. You know, if they've been foraging just all summer long, you know, they don't put on the body weight that they need to help them, you know, winter over. So, you know, it's just an unhealthy thing to do. If they're getting away with it, they're damn lucky. That's the way I see it. But I just don't think that's a very good methodology. I wouldn't subscribe to it at all. No.
No, thank you very much. We're just about out of time, but I do have one last question that was posted by Sally, and this is probably use really all of your education and all of your years of expertise. And Sally wants to know, why did the chicken cross the road? Talk about smart aleck.
because it can.
because it can. Yes, and just like we had chickens in the news right before this episode started, there's a company called Omelette that has now made reflective vests for your chickens.
I heard that this morning on my way to cardio rehab on NPR radio. That's a fact. That's where I heard it first.
There you go. Heard it first right there.
So if those chickens,
awesome.
If those chickens have one of those little hen vests on and that are fluorescent, what would you say, pink and yellow?
Pink and yellow,
then they have a better chance of crossing that road.
That's awesome. Hey, Doc, I've got about 60 seconds left. Thank you very much, folks. It's been Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State VetSupply.com. Okay, go there. If they don't have it, you don't need it. First State VetSupply.com, and it's Chicken PR at First State VetSupply.com. Peter, awesome. Thanks for joining us this late evening show. We're going to try it a couple of times and see what we think, see what the fans think, and thank you very, very much for joining us. We'll see you next Monday at our normal time, 12 p.m. Eastern.
I enjoyed every minute of it.
Me too. Thank you so much for joining us. That's going to wrap up another episode. No show tomorrow, folks, but we will be here both Wednesday and Thursday. I'll post the show topics on our Facebook page. Hope you have a great day. Thanks for joining us, and God bless. Oh.